Hey guys, Sklar Brothers here with Daniel Van Kirk.
I am here.
And our guest on the show is our favorite murderer because she murders this episode. Karen Kilgariff, thanks for joining.
It was my pleasure. What a joy.
We talk about swords.
Oh, yeah.
Sword stores.
A guy who might have deserved to get attacked. Yeah. I'm not saying he did, but he might have.
He's an athlete.
Yeah.
He's an athlete.
That's all you need to know.
Claudia and her life changes.
Tiny Sasquatches. Tiny Sasquatches. And the Sheboygan Clogger.
We need the town's help on that one.
This is it. It is Sword Stores, Tiny Sasquatches, and the Sheboygan Clogger with Karen Kilgariff. You have to listen to this week's episode of Dumb People Town.
It's a good show.
Hey guys, welcome back to The Soft Spot. I'm Julia McCullough.
And I'm Meg Malloy.
And we're so happy that you're listening to us again.
We are. Welcome back.
We're in Burbank again.
Surprise!
Like we always are. And it's 68 degrees and partly sunny. But you thought it was going to rain this morning.
I did think it was going to rain.
You just told me that the weather is always predictable here, and yet you thought it was going to rain this morning, and then it didn't. So that's the definition of unpredictability.
Okay.
We just had lunch at Lancers. Would you describe Lancers?
Cute. Mm-hmm. It's a cute little diner. It's a little on the grimy side.
A little grimy, a little greasy.
It's like the motif is meant to be this sort of like Kelly green and mauve, but it's sort of murky versions of those colors because you kind of feel like maybe nobody's vacuumed in a minute. but it's
Wait,
good.
I'm sorry. I've never heard the term Kelly green. I thought it was a gangster. What's Kelly green?
It's a color.
I've never heard of it.
You thought it was a gangster?
Yeah, like an Irish mobster. You know, Kelly Green. He shot everybody.
Oh, my God.
Don't give that guy a hammer. What's Kelly Green?
Does this demand a Google?
Why would it demand it? Just tell me what it is.
It's a color. It's
you
green.
Use the word, not me.
It's like your standard.
Okay, so there's let's name the greens. There's forest green. I know that one.
Emerald green.
Right. Olive.
Olive green. Yeah. Okay. So Kelly
Green. Mo Green is a gangster from the Godfather movies, but you didn't see that.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Kelly Green is just like your standard. It's a I don't know. It's just like.
Well, you.
Look, it's just like green.
Oh, that's like, not the green that was in Lancers.
Yeah, but that's
like
the green. No, you're wrong. I'm observant. It was the green that it used to be.
Uh-huh.
The green. It was this green yesteryear, maybe, but now
and it's faded.
Right,
gotcha.
It's faded and it's dirty, mm-hmm. So it is no longer Kelly Green.
Well, they're definitely not going to be a sponsor now. That's for sure. We just called the restaurant dirty 5 times.
I didn't say the restaurant was dirty. No, I can't speak for the kitchen. I just ate the food.
Was good. How was that garden burger? I didn't even ask you.
You know, I suspect it might have been frozen, but it was excellently reheated. and the Bloody Mary was good. I had some soup.
Excellent.
some vodka soup.
Everybody in that place looked like we were definitely the youngest by 20 years. You got carded.
I did get carded.
That was
carded.
Exciting.
You did not.
I did not. They forgot to card you and then came back and were like, sorry.
They thought I was like a teen runaway.
Yeah. And I guess I look like I hang around bus stops waiting for girls to get off the bus from Iowa. Like the Poison video, Mama's Fallen Angel. I mean, I didn't have to tell you guys which video it was. You all know.
The point is, I got carded and you didn't.
You super got carded.
Yeah.
And then she told you that that you were her daughter's age. And
then she said her birthday is the 24th.
No, wait, the 25th.
The 26th. And it's of December, so it's like the 25th is kind of like, there's also something going on that day.
Your daughter's birthday is on Christmas?
How did you forget that?
She's like, because it's not on Christmas. I forgot twice.
But
I
guess
the day after.
Maybe she has a lot of kids, and I feel like if I had a lot of kids,
yeah,
I would probably lose track too.
That's true. That's true. Us with our precious one kids.
I know. I'm like...
So, but yeah, I wonder how many kids you got to have before you start being like, I'm not sure what grade they're in.
I'm pretty sure my dad is not 100% on all of our birthdays.
Yeah, because you have three sisters.
I have three sisters.
I can see losing track of that stuff.
Yeah, I could too.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we stumbled on a possible... We went to the store yesterday called the Retro Store.
Mm-hmm.
And we
in
were talking
Pasadena.
About the toys that we loved when we were kids. Because they had all the great toys, like original ones. You know, they had He-Man and...
All the good throwback toys.
Yeah, they had... Star Wars, which everybody has, but then what was the one I was looking at? They had the wrestlers, like WWF wrestler ones. What was the top right one though? That was I was like really into. Oh.
The Transformer one.
Transformers.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were talking about our toys, and you were obsessed with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to gender everything, but that surprised me.
I loved the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
What appealed to you about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I don't know. I thought it was cool. They all had artist names and they liked pizza and common interests and they were a lot less menacing looking back in the day.
I know.
They made their eyes really scary now and they look like demon turtles now.
I don't even consider this new incarnation the same.
Yeah,
thing.
It's not.
But I
everybody's all roided out.
Did you
these
practice
days.
Drawing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when you were a kid?
I'm sure I did. I was a big doodler. I was always doodling, but I was really into them when I was super young.
Yeah,
like I told you, I was. I can't remember if it was soccer or t-ball. Man, my parents really tried to make me an
tried
athlete.
To make you something you're not,
and it did not pan out. But my dad was like, "Here, I got you this hot pink Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles water bottle."
And now you have to go to soccer practice.
And I was like, bring it, baby. I'll be an athlete for this. But I wasn't.
I realize I've been a real piece of crap my whole life. Because when I was in sixth grade, I was obsessed with them. And I wanted to get a bunch of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle toys, but couldn't afford any. So I bought one vehicle without getting any of the actual turtles at a KB toy store at the mall one day and brought it home. And they were like, what is this? And I was like, it's just a car for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But I don't have any actual Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to put them in. So
you've
I guess
always
I just have this
been
car.
An excellent manipulator.
And then that Christmas, I got a whole huge bag full of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stuff. And I felt really guilty about it after I opened it. I was like, I didn't mean to do this, and I feel really badly. Yeah. So... Maybe that's not a really sentimental memory.
Like, you were the sweetest little manipulator.
Yeah.
Didn't even know what you were doing. Golly gee, mister, I have this car and I just don't have anything to put inside of it.
It was like my move when we would walk by a store I wanted to go in, which was, hey, I wonder what that is. Like, I had no idea. I loved them too. They were great. But yeah, it's weird how much when you're a kid, you're like totally willing to try to trick your parents. Like they don't see this stuff coming a mile away.
And it's crazy to think that.
Also, that water bottle was like $1 that he got you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I had it for a really long time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If my.
Do you think it was BPF safe or whatever that's
for
called?
For sure it was not. It was definitely not. Yeah, if my sisters are listening, hey, assholes, they surely remember this water bottle.
So this week you started our campaign to get Kenny Loggins to come on the show.
I did. I slid into his DMs.
I can't believe you just DM Kenny Loggins.
Well,
how did this start? I forget what happened.
I think you just got into this again. Yeah. No, I was listening to... I was listening to Loggins and Messina.
Oh, that's right.
You were making fun of me.
You put on some Loggins and Messina in the car, some deep cuts that I didn't know. I only know Danny's song.
And
I'm a huge fan of his later work.
Who knew every word? Surprise.
You knew every word.
but I was like, oh, no. What prompted me to contact Mr. Loggins was I'm following him on Instagram. And
is it Dr. Loggins? I feel like he must be a
Mister.
PhD. I know, but I'm wondering, he's got to be a doctor of music by now.
Really?
No, probably not. Okay, sorry.
Where are you going with this joke, Dad? He liked a comment that I wrote because
that's what it was.
Yeah, he's playing that 80s cruise and I tagged you and I was like, honeymoon?
Yeah.
And he liked it and I was like, oh my God.
You're like, that's
Kenny
all I
Loggins
need.
Liked my
DM,
comment.
DM.
Time to DM him. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, I just checked a few hours ago. Looks like he still hasn't read it.
He hasn't read it yet?
So that was a
week. What's he busy doing?
I don't know.
Man. Oh, well. Well, thank you for trying.
I'm still going to try.
And if you're listening at home and you have any connection.
If you know Kenny, if you know any of Kenny's people.
Any strings you can
please
pull.
Please let him know that
to
we.
To bring us into the danger zone. We would really appreciate it.
Exactly. We love him. We want him to come on here. Big fans.
I don't even know if he's a warm guy, but we'll find out.
We'll find out. I'll take you if you're cold, Kenny.
I'll meet him where he's at, you know?
Yeah.
I don't care.
We'll come
and
to
you know
you.
What? We'll go to his estate if we have to. Yeah, so help us out. We want to book Kenny Loggins and or, well, the reason also, it's also very exciting. We know they're going to be in town because on July 13th.
The most insane concert.
I mean, we said that the Steely Dan Doobie Brothers concert was where you go shopping for a dad, but this one...
We take it back.
It is the Christopher Cross, Kenny Loggins,
Michael McDonald
at the Hollywood Bowl, all playing together. I mean, the dad cologne in that Hollywood Bowl is going to be a soup worth smelling.
Yeah.
You know? The Old Spice
and
Stetson.
There's going to be a lot
Stetson.
Of Tommy Bahama
I bet there's
going to
be
there.
Some Stetson, yeah. Yeah, it'd be so funny to do an announcement over the thing and be like, we found a Tommy Bahama shirt here. And if you.
In a size extra large.
The whole concert leaves. So that'll be July 13th at the Hollywood Bowl. We hope to see you there. Let us know if you're going. We'll meet up.
Yeah.
It'll be great. So it's time now for a little bit of
soft improvement.
This week, we want to talk about Brené Brown, who I just heard about.
She's amazing. A fellow Texan.
I heard of her because I was on Instagram and I saw my friend Chris Aquilino.
Uh-huh.
Who had her in his stories. He just started, a friend of mine that when I met him, he was working at the cafe down the corner and now he's a regular on Silicon Valley. So that was exciting.
Dreams coming true.
Probably because he's listening to Brené Brown.
So
he posted her in his stories and I was like, who is that? And you were like, oh my gosh, she's amazing.
She is amazing.
So then I just read the transcript of her TED Talk, The Power of Vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
She is amazing.
She really is.
She's great.
Her stuff is so easy to read or listen to if you're listening to one of her talks.
Very direct and simple, yeah.
She's super direct and simple. And she comes at you in this realistic, sort of relatable way. It doesn't ever feel preachy to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like she's selling you some magic trick to make your life better.
No, this was the most authentic sounding stuff I've read in the self-help universe because she basically, in her TED Talk, which is in the top 5 TED Talks of all time, she has over 30 million views on YouTube for this one, The Power of Vulnerability. She basically says compassion and lack of shame are connected, and compassion is born from fully accepting yourself first and loving yourself no matter how, and your vulnerable parts, not trying to say, I got to cover this up or be better before I can engage with other people. You just, you know, she said the happiest people are the ones that have already accepted their imperfections and realize that they can just be of service to other people, you know, with compassion.
Yeah.
Do you have a quote?
I do have a quote. Vulnerability is the birthplace of love, belonging, joy, courage, empathy, and creativity. It is the source of hope, empathy, accountability, and authenticity. If we want greater clarity in our purpose or deeper and more meaningful spiritual lives, vulnerability is the path.
I totally agree with her.
I mean, I do too.
It's because I've seen artists that refuse to show who they are.
Right.
And for the most part, there's certain ones that do characters, and so that's different. But people that don't reveal who they are.
If you can't see someone, yeah. How can you ever relate to them?
And they don't make you feel better. They just, right. If they're just saying, look how great I am, right. You know? But anyway, I'm so happy that she also said you can't numb certain parts of your vulnerability because you don't like them.
Right.
And then also stay open to other parts that you are okay with. Like, you have to feel it all
right.
Or none of it. You know what
She's
I mean?
She's so much about being seen mm-hmm. And seeing others.
Yeah.
And that sounds really simple, but it is super deep.
Yeah. Without artifice or...
Yeah.
You know. Well, so it worked out that I just kind of randomly decided to look into her today because our interview with our guest today was amazingly vulnerable
yeah.
And surprisingly vulnerable for comedians.
Totally.
The Sklar brothers are twins and they're fantastic comics, very successful. They have a great podcast, Dumb People Town, that's going crazy. And I've known them for years, but they got in here and they just let it go. They did not try to hide their feelings or anything.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was great to see them talk about their roles as comedians, their roles as fathers, as brothers.
Mm-hmm.
It was really awesome.
Yeah.
And to hear their New York stories was
yeah.
Pretty great.
Yeah. So we hope that you can show your vulnerability. Remember, people feel connected to you when you show them where you suck.
So be vulnerable, baby. Just do it.
Just do it. Just let people in. And if they crush you, you're stronger tomorrow.
Let yourself be seen.
So let's get to our interview with the Sklar brothers. It's a gooder.
It is.
I'm very happy with it.
All right.
Enjoy. Hey guys, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome How are
to
you?
The soft spot.
I feel so soft in
you
here.
Guys, you
it's
guys.
It's womb like today.
It is. Yeah,
it is.
To come in from the rain and then be in this really soundproof studio.
This may be my soft spot.
You can't do that. It's too.
That's too meta.
Yeah, exactly. That was the word I was looking for. You should host this show. you guys look pretty solid. You're wearing a flannel.
Oh, yeah, man.
You're wearing a nice
got
flannel.
All forms of flannel. And,
oh, and yeah. Jason, you're wearing a
Dutch sweater with a light detail on the lower sleeve.
Let's talk about what you're detail. Wearing.
What am I wearing?
You've got like an afghan with sleeves.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that sweater. When I saw you, Julian, I accosted you and where is that sweater?
You got inside the sweater.
I climbed inside the sweater to give you a hug because I love that sweater.
It's like a Native
this
American
sweater, it's
Aztec
like,
design, but it's pink and gray and white.
It actually, if you look at the design on, that is a Native American design on there. I don't know how well versed you are in Native American artwork.
I'm going to say no.
So that is actually,
yeah.
Well, that is actually an old
Native American,
an old Hopi design. I don't know if you know this, but it's
wow.
An old Hopi design, mm-hmm. Which loosely translates to metrosexual.
Oh, wow.
That was
amazing.
I thought you were going to say nap time, but I like that even better.
To man who does not know his sexuality.
Cherokee for experimenting with different options.
I actually went on a vision quest one time. I went into the woods. And do you want to know what my spirit animal was?
What?
It was a dove.
Nice.
I think you're wrong.
I thought you were going to say Jane Pauley.
It was RuPaul.
Jane RuPauley would be a
Jane
pretty
RuPaul-y
good
RuPauley would
queen.
Be a hell of a drag queen name.
Are you guys even... I can't tell if you guys are even sentimental people. Are you sentimental people?
Oh, my God.
Oh
yes,
my God.
You guys go. Oh my God! I couldn't tell if you were going to say yes or no.
No.
Oh my God! No way.
I always try and deepen it as much as I can.
I mean, I cry. You know what? I was trying to talk to someone about when I would cry in like movies, or I never cry in movies when like beloved characters die. I don't know why that doesn't get me. It's when someone does something incredibly nice for somebody else, like selfless act. I lose it.
I relate to
lose
that.
Lose it. And that's like these weird...
Like there was an old Applebee's commercial several years ago where like the local coach...
Retired and he was having his dinner at Applebee's
and the team...
The Applebee's team.
Applebee's bring him a plaque
that they made,
they made, and then they put it on the wall. And that I could see that 50 times in one basketball game and cry every time.
Wow. Here's,
I think that's really sweet.
That is really sweet.
Here's what me. I don't want to ruin your memory of that commercial, but that's what every coach gets.
Oh. An Applebee's plaque.
That'd be funny if it said best Applebee's diner
ever.
Yeah. As a coach, meh.
Highest cholesterol the coaching circuit.
I don't need a plaque. Your plaque.
I remember when I was in Little League, we had a thing at the end of the season at a place called Goat Hill Pizza. I'll never forget that in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And they gave all the coaches plaques at the end.
Yeah.
And my dad, who had been there every game, but he didn't want to be a coach because he's like a contrarian all the time.
Yeah.
he was there, but I thought they were done. And I almost started crying because I was like, I can't believe they're not going to give my dad a plaque. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then finally they did. And that made me cry even harder.
Of course.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
I'm glad I didn't see that Applebee's commercial.
The fact that they gave your dad an Applebee's plaque. At
Goat Hill Pizza, which was no sense.
The staff at Applebee's went to Goat Hill Pizza and presented.
Your dad, who wasn't actually a coach, with a coach plaque.
Sir, we are not supposed to be here, just like you weren't supposed to be there. But we all did show up, didn't we? So we are handing you this.
Our job is to just make people cry. That's all we do. We don't care about if it's appropriate.
Cheers, man. It's the Waterworks Squad.
Now, so you guys are obviously twins.
Yes.
And Meg has three sisters.
Three sisters,
What's the age differential?
We're each about 2 years apart.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm the oldest.
And you have sisters.
I have one sister.
One sister.
Yeah, but she's 5 years older than me and was like, I'll be in my room, like my whole childhood. So it didn't really count.
That was what I tried to do, but.
Yeah, because you're the oldest. Yeah.
Couldn't shed him.
No offense. No. I just
asked you what day it was. I'll be in my room.
You guys, I mean, from what I hear, you guys used to fight. All the time, right?
Brutal.
Like, it was brutal. Like, physical
brutal.
Fights. Yeah.
Like, WWE, SmackDown.
You have, injury. You have scars and stuff, right?
Crazy fights. Yeah. Bite.
Over what?
Oh, my God.
The dumbest shit.
Yeah. The dumbest shit. Yeah. Stolen clothes. Mm-hmm. She said and pitting our parents against each other and just being total assholes, pretty much.
Female energy. Doses of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but you guys are twin female energy, so that must have been a lot. No, so what kind of, were you guys like that? Were you guys at each other's throats, or were you guys best friends, or what happened?
I think we had
a bizarre relationship in that it evolved faster than, like, best friends was almost like it's like a step back. Like, because we had friends that we were friends with, and those friends, you would go through the things that you would do with best friends. It was a lot of stuff between us was unspoken.
Yeah.
Wow. So like we could go grab our gloves and a baseball and just throw the ball back and forth without really saying a word to each other for like 3 hours.
Right.
And it not be weird and it be totally cool. It's like being 100% comfortable or go play tennis, you know, up at the like back and forth with each other for 2 hours or whatever. And it. Again, not really have a deep conversation the way you would with your friends.
Right.
So you never really got to know each other.
No, I don't know him at all. I don't know him at all.
It was more proximity with no
depth. Did you guys
no
ever
depth.
Get into any like physical fights?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Sure, but like I think we realized that wasn't, I don't know if we just had
Well, you're evenly matched, so it's like.
But you know what it was? I think we always, it's like, you know how women like, when you're single, you won't hook up with someone because you think like two steps ahead and you think about what the aftermath is going to be. Men,
I don't know.
No,
it's always true.
Not always, but men.
You know.
You certainly men don't do that. Generalization.
Men in general don't do that as much as women do.
Yeah.
I think we, in a weird way, like we were able to see her onto the other side of the fight. So sometimes we would like hit each other, but we would never punch each other in the face. We kind of had weird ground rules to the way we physically fought.
A lot of slapping.
Right. It was like punching in the meaty part of the back. It was kind of like that. It was It was a way to get out our aggression because we would get angry with each other. Right. The way
we definitely fought. Like, we were close enough that almost in the way you would get down on yourself, like, I would hold him up to that standard.
Okay. Oh, so,
like, that sounds fun.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
Terrible. I mean, awful. But yeah, we definitely fought, and we definitely expect a lot out of each other.
But I would say you're also playing down the fact that I think we were also very close because we had really similar interests. And we love a lot of things. We loved comedy at an early age. We loved stand up in a time.
We loved comedy. We loved sports. We loved certain kinds of music that we were both into, and
theater. Like, we loved, we had this weird array of likes that we didn't force, we didn't say we have to like the same things, but we were drawn to a lot of similar things. Okay. Sometimes it veered in different directions, but mostly, like, you know, we had weird likes. We liked, like, clothes, like kind of shopping clothes, sports, drama, music, and comedy. Like, those are a very bizarre, if we were in any one of those things, there are a lot of people in those single areas who hated the other things that
we loved. Yeah, yeah.
Like, all the drama people and the comedy people were like, fuck sports and those jock dumbasses. And we were like, we like sports. You know, we were kind of into that too. So I think what was weird is we kind of were a part of many different groups, social groups, and we traversed them all. We weren't in one group. We kind of had this little weird group, the two of us.
Yeah. So I was kind of the opposite in that I didn't have friends.
Oh.
So I feel like that was...
Maybe you just didn't get your ass beat enough by your sister.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was.
In my room.
So she doesn't have time to beat your ass.
So do you guys have a soft spot together? Like, do you have a sentimental...
Well, and like, knowing that we were doing this show. Yeah. There are a couple sentimental, like, timestamps from our lives because we've done, obviously, spent a lot of time together. Mm-hmm. The first one we were talking about is when we were older. This is kind of, I think we were about to move from New York to LA, late 90s. And we were super into this one album that came out by the band Luna.
And and if I can tell a story about it recently. So about 3 years ago, three and plus years ago, my wife got me a record player as a gift. And that has, like, become an obsession over a late in life obsession over the last 3 years.
Correct. Collecting
that
records?
Just collecting records on the whole. Like, whenever we go places, I always go to record stores, and just the idea of finding, you know, having friends that have album collections and really asking them, what do you love and why do you love this album? And let's listen to it. It's like such a great shared experience. And through people I really, truly admire their tastes and admire who they are, friends of mine, I can think of two right now, my friend Peter and my friend Christian. Great guys who, you know, they just have impeccable musical tastes, you know, that exceed mine. And so
they enjoy telling people about it a
lot? Yeah, they do.
They stand higher than you, so they physically and literally and figuratively talk down to you.
No, but I definitely pick their brains. I'm like, what do you think about this? Anyway, so I have wanted this album, but there was a period of time in the 90s where bands weren't making albums. They were just making CDs. They just weren't making vinyl.
Right.
So, like, there was just no vinyl versions of these albums. Like, and in the early 2000s.
We had moved on.
They had moved on. Like, this is what it's
going to
be.
No one's going to get back into vinyl.
Nobody's going to do that. And so you can't find it anywhere. We went and had a meeting with, like, these guys who worked on the Carson Daly show. And he's got the new show, which I love the new format of the show. I've been on it. Super fun. And they do a lot of music, but it's so great. They don't actually bring people onto a set and do it. They find out, okay, this band's coming to town. Uh-huh. We'll bring four cameras and shoot them at their show at the Greek or at the Echo or wherever. So one of the music producers...
We walk by
his office, and I see this, like, big kind of... It looks like a giant like picture book or you know, like a coffee table book. And it says Luna on the side on the right. And I was like, is that the band Luna? Is that a book about Luna? And he said, No. I'm friends with the drummer, and he opens it up, and, like, I have been, like, you know, tracking on Discogs, which is this very specific album, you know, you get albums from all over the world, and you can things you can't find. And
from private sellers, it's like
private sellers and sometimes record stores and all. So just all these places all over. And I've been tracking this one album because for us in the 90s, this album was
it
represented us being in New York and us being like single post college. We had just done a show on TV. We had just done our show on MTV Apartment 2F. It was such a good time in life. We started coming out to LA.
We quit our day jobs. We were fully working on comedy. At night, we'd be running around the city, New York City, and doing 10 sets of comedy a week. And, you know, this album was also so much about New York.
You were living together?
Together with a third person, a friend of ours.
Because that was the only way anyone could afford to live in Manhattan. We were just like jammed into a tiny
Find a pair of twins.
Yes, you had to find a twin.
That's what they tell you. We actually lived with your sister and we never saw her. Thankfully, we had so much general living space because she was always in her room.
Real. She's a bitch, right?
Wouldn't give us the time of day.
I'm like, you're not 5 years older than us.
This album, he pulled it out. And I've been looking all over for it. And everywhere, it's like 300.
Wait, so were it books? Was it books of CDs? Or
no, it was a box set of the CDs.
Box set of the album.
Of the album.
Of the albums. Of the actual vinyl.
So Randy's like holding the vinyl. He's like, I've been searching for you forever.
It's $300 for, like, if you go out to find it. It was like $300. I think they reissued it since that time. But this is before the actual reissue. And everywhere I look, it was $300. I'm like, I can't justify spending $300 on one album as much as I love this album. But I thought about it. That's how much I love this. I thought about it. But you can't.
Listen to it 300 times. It's a buck.
It's a buck.
It's a buck.
It's reasonable.
Yeah.
So I was like, I've been looking all over for brand new, has never been played. I've been looking all over for this album. I started to freak out in this guy's office as we're leaving this meeting. And he's like, take it.
Holy shit.
I was like, what? Are you kidding? He said, just take it. I can get another one. I was like,
wow.
My God. It felt like
you almost started crying. You sold it immediately for $300.
Smart. He was back up on discount. It was really
some guy in Germany.
Can I ask you a question? Because I only know one. I remember one Luna album.
Which one?
And it had a green cover.
Okay. So the green cover, that's the one with Anesthesia. That was the first Luna album.
Okay.
This is the second.
I think that's when the band was called Luna 2 almost. Yeah. The second one was it Pup Tent? Was that the second one?
Oh, yeah, Pup Tent's the second one.
What's the kind of what do they sound like? Is it dreamy?
It is dreamy.
Because they're called Luna.
It's alt dreamy. It's kind of.
Oh, it's alt dreamy.
Alternative.
let's
listen to Chinatown. I want to play you guys a little bit of it, but it's so New York. It reminds me so much of
like
riding on the subway.
I'll close my eyes and be in a cab
or on the subway.
Wait. Oh, you.
You can turn it up. I mean, it just feels like this was... There we go. Okay.
This is how I remember them. Yeah. Like jangly, almost kind of like a,
and
like
the guy
a
doesn't have a
surf
great,
rock.
The guy doesn't have a great voice, but he owns
distinct
it.
Distinct voice.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Here. It's a real $300 voice.
Yeah.
There it is.
Here it is.
All right, now.
That's a big intro.
Long instrumental.
That is a really
just
long
keeps
intro.
Going.
That's okay. We're actually known as the longest podcast in America.
2 hours later, we're like, he will get to a song.
He's going to get there. It's a Ravi Shankar song.
Yeah.
Just this lyric, too. In the tiny, tiny hour.
Which I feel like in the tiny hour between the evening and the day. Okay, so now my life is filled with doing homework with kids and taking them to gymnastics and ballet and making sure they get their stuff done while I'm jamming all the work that I can do in our work day. I don't have the luxury to sit there and understand the tiny hour between the evening and the day. That doesn't exist in my life.
That was the time you'd just walk across town and meet someone at a bar for
just
a drink.
Let's get an early drink
in New York.
Very New York... New York feeling, yeah.
So it just...
This song is called Chinatown.
And this album just tickles that area for me. And also, pre-9/11, so the world was like...
Perfect.
Was a different...
A little more chill.
A little more... I wouldn't say perfect, but it was a lot more chill and a lot more sort of open-minded. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It just... There was like this... Wasn't this like sense of dread that kind of underneath it for... many people. I'm sure right. there was.
Also, it was a really exciting time in comedy. You know, alternative comedy was just starting to explode in New York, and we were in the ground floor of that whole scene. The
people still liked Marc Maron.
Yes, he was lovable. No, but there was so much. I mean, he was one of the luminaries of the scene, and we definitely were sort of
at Luna Lounge.
At Luna Lounge. So it was all kind of coming together.
Anyway.
But this album and this whole thing felt. For both of us.
So definitely, that's a soft spot for us. Like, I go back to that time going, what a lovely time in our careers and in our living and living in New York. And again, without the responsibilities of families and whatnot, it was a simpler, better time.
I will say that it's so hard when you try to play a song for someone and no matter how good you know it is, somehow you put it on and half the time you're like, you know what, never mind. Yeah. Like, it's just never gonna.
But or it's this, the scene from
you
my
guys,
love.
It worked. This is great.
You feel it,
really
right?
Like
it's
really like this the first great. Time, and I can see really getting into this the more I listen to it. I can't afford this album.
No, you can't. It's been reissued, and you can't.
Oh, okay.
I'll say this about the album. The entire album, top to bottom. That was the other thing about it.
Yeah.
Is, you know how like there's some albums where you're like, I love four songs and the rest are just shit.
Yeah.
Every single song
there
on this album.
There's so few albums
that you can listen to all the way through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, when you put it on, I've now been listening to records. I listen to it in the morning when I make my kids breakfast and all that stuff. And then we listen to an album at dinner.
Yeah.
And we only listen to the ones we can listen to all the way through because you don't want to like listen to three songs and then be like, okay, we got to
do the rest
this.
Of the album.
It's
sucks.
Awful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's like. Like after, like Neil Young's After the Gold Rush is like, you can do that until after the Gold Rush. And you're like, all right, I don't need a French horn for 7 minutes.
I'm out. I love that album, though.
I know, me too.
Great album.
Ours, I would say, I know one of, off the top of our head, one of ours like that is Interpol's first album.
Oh, yeah.
Turn on the Bright Lights.
And that's very New York for both of us. Extremely New York. Same thing, you know, PDA? Before Family. Yeah, that's a single.
Yeah. What
but,
about, what had Slow Hands? Was
Evil,
that on
Slow Hands Slow was on. Hands. Wasn't Slow Hands on... Antics?
Yeah, Slow Hands, I think,
was on Antics. But, those two, they're both really great. But the first one is, like, really just so... I mean, they you know, they went to NYU, and they were like, we're going to write a love letter to New York, and they did.
They did.
And it's great. I love Magnetic Fields a lot, too, but that 69 Love Songs is, you know... They're literally 69, and they're not all great.
They're not all great. You know?
But the great ones are great.
The great ones are great. But yeah, I mean, the thing about New York, it has this way of immortalizing music because it ties you to...
Because you're walking around.
You're in your head, and you see the city, and it is just... I mean...
And you're delightfully self-absorbed.
You're so self-absorbed, and yet you're also self-aware. There's like two things. You're aware of yourself within the surroundings set to the soundtrack of whatever you're listening to, whatever you're loving. Mm-hmm. And that motion, maybe it's because New York City has been in so many films, or maybe it's because we've all watched Woody Allen films or those things, but like there's a part of you that understands that music is part of your experience there.
Right. Well, I think also... In New York, you're walking everywhere.
Yep.
You've got your headphones on. It's like you're kind of creating your own soundtrack to every moment of every day. And
you're viscerally experiencing
it
on every level.
It's so easy to just like snap back into a certain place on a block when, you know, it was snowing and just it brings you right back.
Love it.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Love it. So that was one.
That's what I love about it is that you brought it back. Because I always wonder, because I have so many of these things, obviously, and they work on me. Like, you know, like that. And I always wonder how often other people resort to that. Like, if am I the only one listening to Genesis every day? or is everybody else? But, like, it really does fix my mood a lot of times, especially with responsibilities like kids and stuff. You get so stressed out.
Yeah.
And it's hard as a parent, when you sometimes feel like all that you are is a parent and you just want to go back to a time where... You're a little bit more in touch with yourself outside of that role.
It reminds you. I went to Cuba. We both went to Cuba once, like in separate times. Different times. But like I went back to Cuba and I was like,
what a weird thing to do separately.
Yeah. No, I went first. I was with a friend taking a trip and she and I went to Costa Rica and we kind of got bored, and I remembered someone telling me a story because this is when you weren't allowed to travel this was after.
From America.
Yeah, from America. Yeah. And so I think it was like 2000 maybe or something like that. And so we But I remember they said they booked a flight when they were in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
So we went to a travel agency and booked a flight to Cuba and spent 4 days in Cuba in the middle of our Costa Rica trip. And it was unbelievable. It was like another
I've heard Cuba is the best part of Costa Rica.
I've heard that before. You're the Cuba, Costa Rica. So I had a wedding there. My wife's parents' best friend's son got married to a Cuban woman.
I'm sorry, was that serious? My wife,
best friend's son. I'm just trying to lay it out. Because it was someone we know got married there.
So very close relationship. But anyway, sorry.
Fisk and Michelle's son, Matthew's daughter.
All right. Got it.
So they got married there, and they were like sort of a well-known Cuban family, and there was an international jazz festival going on at the time. So it was 2 years after this. You still couldn't travel down to Cuba, but we were able to fly with international press passes for this jazz festival to go down there for this thing. And for the wedding itself, it was in the Capitolio, which was in Havana, the Capitol building. And I was wearing a tuxedo that my wife's grandfather had tailored, like handmade in China in 1950.
Wow.
And I stood outside on the night of the, because at night you just really can't see much because it isn't a huge skyline or anything. Mm-hmm. And I stood outside on the steps, the raised steps of the Capitolio. I'm not a cigar smoker, but I was smoking.
You're in Cuba.
Cuba. Yeah. I was smoking a Monte Cristo number two. That if
you had a look going on. You had to complete it.
If you're not a cigar smoker, I would suggest if you can ever get near a Monte Cristo number two, it is the best. So I'm smoking a Monte Cristo number two, and I'm standing out on these steps looking out at all the cars that are from like 1959, and in a tuxedo from 1950. And I thought to myself, this for a second feels like what it must be to time travel.
Wow.
It really feels like I'm back. I'm now the person in the 1950s. If I looked out, this is what 1959 would look like here, or 57 or whatever. Music, I think, has that same ability to just you the second you put it on, if you close your eyes, you're immediately back in that cab in New York. You travel through time. I believe that it's possible to travel back to a time where you are thinking about yourself in a different way and all that other stuff. And so those are the only two times that I've ever felt like, all right, time travel is actually possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's, Cuba's like it's 1960 the time, right?
The whole time. 50s.
Is it 50s?
59. Yeah. I think the revolution.
It's 1 year. They picked 1 year and then they were done.
It's when the revolution happened. Everything kind of stopped at that point.
And then it's like
froze. Yeah.
It froze. Like,
it feels like something happened in 1959.
I can't put my finger on it.
That was it.
I actually met, well, I don't want to ruin the moment, but I had a Lyft driver in Florida this past weekend. I was on the road in Florida, and he was a Cuban.
Were you in Miami?
Yeah. No, I was in Naples.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is on the west side, yep.
And he was like a Republican. It was so weird.
Well, no, Cubans are deep Republicans. It is traditional. They are deep, deep, deep Republicans.
Big Reagan heads.
They're just, the Cubans are like the only, they as a group typically vote Republican.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's just the thing.
Well, luckily they can't vote.
I don't think so. Can women vote? I don't know. You can answer that better.
Has that happened?
She's not wearing a Bernie shirt today.
I'm not
but she
wearing
has
Bernie
many
shirt
of them.
Today, but I have a lot of them.
Yeah,
feel the Bernie.
So individually, let's real quick. We'll do your individual ones if you bothered to think of them.
We did.
We did. I mean, I thought of a movie that came for me from that time.
Get an idea, people, is what years did you guys graduate high school?
So we graduated in high school in 90.
Okay. 90, okay.
And then graduated college in 94. So high school in St. Louis, Missouri, where we grew up. And
no
then,
bragging, but you did it on time.
We did it on time.
Yeah.
No, our parents couldn't afford
it.
They put two kids through college at the same time. Yeah. So,
you had to go.
Yeah, 94, University of Michigan. We both finished there. So in Ann Arbor.
All right, so what's your movie? Sorry, I just wanted
my
to
my movie that. Was shortly thereafter, but it reminded me of a time. It reminds me of independent films in a way that they're not made anymore, just because I think that level of film just doesn't get made.
Yeah.
Or if it does, it gets made on a bigger level. Walking and Talking, the film with Anne Heche.
It sounds familiar. Really,
Catherine
familiar.
Keener.
Do you know
nothing. Catherine Keener and Liev Schreiber.
Oh, I love this cast.
And Billy Bragg did the music. And
Was Kevin Corrigan in it?
Kevin Corrigan's in it.
Well, he was in every movie. Yeah, exactly.
Every
for about
indie
six
film.
Years, yeah.
But in this film, he plays like the ugly guy. They call him like
really Kevin Corrigan.
Kevin Corrigan, and he's and there's just a great scene in this movie. It's about young people. And it, we were in that moment in our lives, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Anne Heche and whoever, is it Todd Field? Like, he's another actor Todd who Field. Became a director. Like, they were with each other, and they were about to get married, I think, in the film. And then everyone else, you know, Catherine Keener is kind of, Liev Schreiber's in the film. And it's just great. It's a great, great,
so
great.
It's called Walking and Talking. It's definitely written by Aaron Sorkin, right?
No. Yeah, right? A lot of walk and talks. What? It was Nicole Hofcenter. I'm not sure. It was such a great film. It was really a, you know,
like an indie dialogue heavy.
Yeah. Like from a female perspective film. I just loved it. And I just, it was a great, there's just great stuff in the film. And it's one of those that like, it was made on a small budget, but it was very clearly shot on film. And it wasn't like hooky or anything like that. It was just about young people being young. And it felt very honest and true.
Do you
they never made a movie
it?
Like that.
I own it. I have it. I haven't seen it in a while, but I loved it. I have a soft spot for it because I think in that moment in time, it was like, it was a great movie about relationships, and that was a very like relationship-y time.
That's when you're trying to figure out what they mean,
right? You know, you're getting into longer term things, and you're understanding what it means. I mean, in the movie,
how you exist as an adult, kind
and who you are going to be in relation to other people. Like there's the in the film, Kevin Corrigan plays a video. He works in a video store, so that should tell you what you know in the independent video store.
That's making me so sad that like. You can't be cool and work in a video store and
that
pay
was
your
my
rent
job on
anymore,
our that
know?
Was my job on our first TV show that he me worked and Matt Price and I worked in a video
the
store
Village Video
on apartment 2. But this was a thing where he worked in the store and he was really nice to Catherine Keener and he was really cool to her and he vibed with her a little bit, but she just happened to call him just referred to him as the ugly guy. And then they get together and they hook up and he's stays over, and then Anne Heche leaves a message at her apartment, like, whatever happened with the ugly guy?
Oh,
did you guys hook up? And he hears it, and it hurts him really badly. And so he kind of just ends their relationship without necessarily telling her why. And so she's left to try and figure out what went wrong. It's really great.
Oh, so that's the plot.
That's part of it.
Oh, okay.
Todd Field and Anne Heche getting married is part of it. It's a lot of walking. There's a lot of talking. It's a really
Special effects
is
in that movie
is there
amazing.
A lesson? Is there a lesson or a thing you kept from that movie that you realize like has an outsized level of importance in terms of, oh, this is how you handle that situation, or this is what people are like? Because I've definitely been way too influenced by things I saw when I was a certain age, and I'm like, hey, I always thought people thought this way because of that movie, and then it turns out it's just that movie or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's like a worldview.
I mean,
like, what's your takeaway from the movie? Like,
I think there was something in that film that was about like dropping, like they were leaving sort of their old selves and emerging into new things and dropping some of the things that they thought they couldn't do anymore. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was like that moment where it was like, okay, be with who you want to be with. Do the thing you want to do. There's a lot of things in your head of how you grew up where you're supposed to do this thing and you're supposed to do that thing. We, of course, were like almost going to go to law school because that was the track that you did if you didn't know what you
were
going to do.
You're Jewish. Right?
Yeah, you have to. That is the law.
We had to entertain that.
We were stepping away from what was, you know,
expected of us.
Yeah, and going into the great unknown to try to do a career in comedy and entertainment, a decision that we made 25 years ago that I'm only learning to regret right now.
It kind of reminds me of like the Brothers McMullen or something like that. Right?
You know what it was? Brothers McMullen was a very male, was a very male version of
it. Right.
This was a female version in it, and it's softer, soft spot.
Yeah.
And it's also a little more evolved, and it's, you know, worth a checkout. I think you would totally dig it.
No, we'll definitely watch it.
It's funny. You mentioned
great.
Brothers McMullen.
And I love Catherine Keener so much.
I mean, this was her at her indie height.
Yeah.
Like, this is right before, I think it's like minutes.
Too bad she hasn't done any indie movies since
then. I know. I think this is like a few minutes before.
She's the Hulk now, right?
Being,
she plays the Hulk.
Being John Malkovich. I think it was right before that.
Okay.
Oh, so yeah. That's cool. That puts
all right,
time
so that was yours.
Was there a soundtrack to that? That was
amazing. And I think Billy Bragg did a lot of the
sound. Oh, Billy Bragg. That's right. Yeah.
It's so okay. good. So, so good.
All right. So I have.
It's Randy's turn.
I'm going to go deeper into our past.
Oh. I hope this embarrasses Jason by accident.
No, it won't. It won't, but we were both present for it.
So like, I can speak to it, too.
You can speak to it, too. I mean, as we're doing this, I'm like, how in the world did we not pick, you know, Live at PJ's, the Beastie Boys song? How do we not pick that song? Because we used a portion of that in the pilot to play the song of the Apartment 2F pilot that we had. The Beastie Boys for us always represented like the coolest Jewish dudes you ever could be, and always what we wanted to be.
It's so cool. My son takes a breakdancing class now, and when I put him to bed at night, I will lay in bed with him and we watch like crazy breakdancing videos.
Oh, cool.
But I remembered that in Root Down, the video
Harlem Zulu on the Harlem Zulu Beach show, or
right? And they showed all kinds of like sweet breakdancing moves from that time, and I was like, "This is the Beastie Boys, and this is this." And I'm like educating this little 9-year old.
He's like, "Can I dance like that?"
I was like, "No," but he's taking the class. I'm like, "Someday maybe you can." And I was just like, "It's so great." And I'm like, "One of them died." He's like, "Which one?" I'm like, "You just listen, like I'll explain to you who's."
No one's sure.
No. But I'm like. You gotta, and there's live footage of them performing, and the crowd loves them so much, and they're so cool, and they're so much themselves.
Yeah.
It's a great,
so
it's
I don't
really
know
great.
Why we do that. I'm going to go further back.
But we did, we're not talking about that.
Not talking about that. We're going further back in our past.
Okay.
To now we're the age, now my kids are the age that we were back then when we were doing this. So our parents used to go out every Saturday night. They would just go out with friends, and
they started to leave us
either by ourselves or with babysitters when we were too young. But like on Saturday night, I remember there was like an excitement that like we would get to watch. We would stay up later and watch Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And, you know, we would just get excited about that they were going out, and that it was a little bit of like a freedom sort of a thing. So I just remember them getting ready to go out and us like kind of that early Saturday night feeling of like,
no, I can get that. Yeah.
So we can eat whatever we want.
Oh, I remember totally with my sisters. We were like, we're going to fuck shit up after they leave.
And they're out. We're gonna fight.
Throwing down.
We're going to fight like it's a battle royal. No.
But like so every Saturday night we would watch two shows back to back. And I think everybody in our age range did this exact same thing.
Charlie Rose.
Until he touched us. It was Love Boat and Fantasy Island. And those two, the fact that like we were watching those two shows back to back, they were so adult.
That is not where I thought this
they
was
were
going.
So adult. So Friday night was The Hulk and Dukes of Hazzard, those two. But Saturday night was Love Boat and Fantasy Island.
But Saturday night was reserved for Love.
Do we have the Love Boat theme? Do we have that?
I don't know.
All right, so.
Oh, man.
Ironically, not Yacht Rock.
No, it's not Yacht Rock at all.
But
solid song.
Okay,
solid song.
I want to hear it. I haven't heard it in forever.
Love.
Oh man, look that's
that bass.
Jazzy.
That bass solid. Is.
All right, so. Okay, so
did you ever watch Love Boat?
No.
So these shows were like
because it was still on reruns when
they were like
a kid,
chance
right?
for like guest stars to just come on and do these stories. And a friend of ours did a really. I mean, how funny was that he did?
Mike Novak?
Mike Novak, who has edited some stuff of ours throughout the years. He lived in New York. I remember he did this. This is the funniest thing.
Big stoner, this dude.
He took storylines, because they would have four storylines in an hour-long show.
Yeah.
And they would just bounce between each of the storylines. So every fourth scene, you pick back up the storyline again.
He edited the storylines for one storyline, like back to back. So literally,
there'd be so many value changes, like from scene to scene. If you put them all together, it would, like it's
makes
jarring.
No sense. It's so jarring.
Oh, it didn't work.
If you did it that way, because they'd be like so happy and they're hanging out, and then the next scene they're fighting and they're really breaking up each other. The next scene, it's like, I'm sorry, I love you so much, but just seeing
it's more like a real Love Boat.
Yeah.
I mean, some rough
Tinder
waters.
Boat. Tinder, yeah. Gay cruise.
That's so funny that you. you have a soft spot for Love Boat?
I mean, that is the softest of all of the soft spots.
You guys win.
You win.
So Love Boat, and so it just reminds us of Saturday night as kids when we had no worries in the world, and we just were being taken care of. We went off in our brains to this like this mythical boat where people would go and like fall in love and not. Mm-hmm. It was just so bizarre. And then Fantasy Island would come on.
It's
after
just
that.
So funny. I'm sorry. It's just so funny to picture two. I'm guessing you're nine or so.
Ten, nine years old.
This is like two. 80. I'm picturing two twin boys holding hands and watching other people fall in love.
We would not touch each other. But we did watch it and love it.
Yeah,
I don't even know why we gravitated towards it, but it then, I'm glad we did, because we then, as younger people who developed our comedy chops, mm-hmm. you know, as kids, we would make fun of that stuff. So like, thank God we had a, you know, something to sort of play off of.
Yeah.
Right.
And once you understood that, it was Love Boat and Fantasy Island. Fantasy Island was Ricardo Montalban and Tattoo, Hervé Villechaize.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And so Fantasy Island and Love Boat, that would be...
Is this Fantasy Island?
Here it goes.
I remember Fantasy Island, but not like I would turn off Love Boat.
So people would go to Fantasy Island to just like
it's like an island.
It's
island.
Such an awesome premise,
and they would then
live out their fantasies.
Live out their fantasies, but a lot of times that
but they would learn something.
Show them the dark side of what was going on with their lives.
Oh man!
And
that show should have been called "Be Careful What You Wish For Island."
Yeah. That's right. And then you gotta get God Island. And everybody likes to think that like Game of Thrones' use of Dinklage is like just incredible, but I mean Hervé Villechaize. Was
I know.
The
Peter
original.
Dinklage has never seen a plane on that show. Not one time.
The plane, like, and his calling of the plane just is so pejorative.
I know.
He has to call Montalban boss.
Yeah.
That's like a boss, the plane.
Well, now, have you ever watched an episode of Fantasy Island?
They wore the same white suit.
Okay, so hold on. Back, you gotta break it down.
I know who you're talking about.
This beautiful paradise-like island, Hawaii-style island, mm-hmm. and. At our guest arriving on time. So
Ricardo Montalban.
Yeah.
My dear tattoo. Each guest is paying $50,000 for a 3-day stay. $50,000?
That was like a million bajillion dollars back then.
So, I mean, Hervé Villechaize, who, like, you listen to it and you just thought to yourself, like, I watched him and I'm like, this guy, I'm sure he's like an incredible drunk. I mean, like,
and then he told like epic stories, just crushing all kinds of poon.
Like, wasn't it like magical surrealism though? Like, there was like magic. Right?
Yeah, yes. Like Rourke had powers.
You would say like you would show up and you would go, my fantasy is to be a famous guitar player or whatever, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So then they on that island for apparently for $50,000,
$50,000, you
in
could
three days,
that.
They would show you what it would be like to be a famous guitar player, but then there would always be a pitfall. That you didn't
dark
see.
Side,
right.
Gotcha.
And then so you come back to your regular life, maybe with a
more
enhanced.
Appreciation.
Oh, I like being an accountant. Yeah.
I don't need to be famous.
Yeah, that sucked. I want to be an accountant.
Who wants adulation?
I want to be an accountant who's now in debt $50,000.
Yeah. Because now I know exactly how much that hurt.
And you don't even
account.
Get to keep the little guy.
No.
You got to leave
What share. An expensive lesson to learn.
I know.
How we as 9 and 10-year-olds could understand the complexities of people and adults in their lives exiting their own lives to then have this fantasy.
I know.
I don't know. But well, like it, I have a soft spot
but
for
you know what it
people.
Does? It speaks to... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we interviewed John Mulaney recently about his soft spot. His was Mr. Rogers, right?
Oh
and
my
then
God,
we
that
and then they have a documentary coming out.
I cried at
and there's
the
a
trailer.
Quote. We just watched it last night.
Every time we watch anything, I like lose
she
it.
She gets teary-eyed.
Yeah.
It's so cute. But there's a quote in there where he says, what people don't understand is kids have an incredible depth of feeling just as... deeper than anything that we ever have. So
over
when
time.
You're, I remember being 10 and feeling more. About
and he,
you know
he also that. Said, he also said, show, I'm going to start crying. He said, show people that they are loved and they have the capacity to love.
Yeah.
That was the whole point of what he was trying
That's
to do.
I'll say right. this, but like you as an adult, you know, as we go through, especially this business that we go through, it hardens you in a way because.
What do you mean? I'm having a great time.
Oh, so easy.
Like, I mean, I can't even
Nothing
tell
but
you.
Success.
Nothing but success. No, I mean, like, you, because you say to yourself, if I am stupid enough to throw all of my hope into something,
mm-hmm.
right.
I will be crushed. And you yourself won't allow yourself to go there.
Right.
Because you know that it's just the numbers of it are
That's
just
exactly
not
right. Yeah.
The it's possibility of failure is it you don't really
you
feel
don't understand
that, when you're
that as a
kid.
Child. Yeah. So like then maybe that's why those shows
everything
really
seems so hopeful
possible.
And possible.
Possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everything's in front of you. Everything.
And now I have an entire reservoir of feelings that I will not open the cap.
Right. Yeah, so no.
Like, yeah.
I'm like,
sure.
I can't lose 3 days for my family for feeling those feelings right
exactly.
now.
I can't be out of commission. I gotta make the fucking lunches.
I gotta talk about Luna tomorrow.
Yeah, so my God.
I gotta
teach my kids about breakdancing.
I think
the other thing that is interesting about that as your daughter gets older, mm-hmm. you'll understand this too, is that, and this, I think this is a larger generational issue, mm-hmm. and it feeds into the reason why we are sort of feel like kids feel like they're catered to too much. When we were kids, what we watched were TV shows about situations that were not relatable to us. Good Times was a show about a black family in the projects trying to make ends meet. The Jeffersons was about a richer black family dealing with racism because mm-hmm. they were out of their station. And then there was an interracial couple and a British guy. And like, it was all about like the American dream a lot. Mm-hmm. And so all these shows, All in the Family was another show we watched a lot. As kids, we watched these adult shows because that's all there was.
Yeah.
There weren't like 18 shows like kicking it.
I think there was literally like Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers.
And then that was it. And then it went to adult shows. And then Cheers and all the MASH.
We watched MASH. Like the Facts of Life and Silver Spoons.
Facts of Life and Silver Spoons, they were kind of on the there, but they weren't quite.
Hit you there.
They did a little bit. But like,
but we still watch the older things. And nowadays it's like, well, here, watch all these shows that are about kids and about
kids in them, cater to you. The jokes aren't, they don't make you work hard. You don't have to like look at a situation and be like, oh my God, people can't afford their rent. So they're having a rent party.
It's kind of freaking me out that you're
it
talking
is.
About because it's like I mean I know that you
we talk about this all the time mm-hmm. like I'm gonna call out Peppa Pig right now.
Peppa
Pig's a little smart ass and there was nothing like that. I don't remember ever watching
daddy,
you've got a fat little belly whatever she says
Peppa, why
I am fat stupid
excuse me
it's because your mom doesn't love me.
No, that would be an adult show.
That would be the real answer. But yeah, no, there are those moments that force you as kids to step out of your kidness,
right,
and live in another universe.
The world around you
force you to at least acknowledge the fact that there is a world larger than you, and
right?
There is a world that doesn't surround you or cater to you,
mm-hmm. yeah.
And as a result, you've got to. It just allows you to be more aware of mm-hmm. other stuff around you. So I think we had an acute awareness at that age. Even through these shows, I mm-hmm. guess, is what I was saying. And, you know, also it helped us formulate our opinion about things because even as we were watching it, we're like, we weren't sitting there going, the world is like this.
Yeah.
There were moments where like, look at how funny and cheesy that is. Or, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like the comedy's not good. Mm-hmm. Like I remember when we saw the guy.
There's a laugh track on Love
Boat.
It's
a laugh track on Love Boat. We're like, where's
it's just God. Not a studio.
Like,
it's a single camera.
It's on a boat. It's a single camera show. Where's the
studio? Who's laughing?
Yeah, who's laughing at this? And remember we saw Adam Bricker, the guy who played the doctor.
Yes.
It was in dinner theater in Aspen, doing dinner theater in Aspen.
Oh
my
God.
Like our family like went, I mean, we did never took trips like this, but like later around like I'd say 88. Mm-hmm. So maybe, okay, 6 years after we were watching the show, that guy, because he couldn't get any acting work beyond this,
right.
was doing dinner theater. And I remember like that was a big thing. He was a draw at the dinner theater in Aspen.
Mm-hmm. Real life,
yeah,
man. Real
man.
Talk.
Real talk.
Oh,
straight up real talk.
Mm. Well, I mean, we do. I the thing that reminds me of that feeling of is always. I never understood how at 8 years old, the thing that I spent more of my attention on than anything else in my life at the time for a solid year, possibly 2 years, I wouldn't listen to anything else. I wouldn't think about anything else was Appetite for Destruction by Guns N' Roses. I was 8 years old and I'm like, what at the time, what was I thinking I was listening to? Because none of it was part of my life.
Dude,
you know?
Welcome to the jungle. My kids go crazy.
So do ours.
They love that song. You put that on and I even like, I'm in the front of the car and I'm like, you know where you are.
If I love
it. The jungle, baby. And then I have to talk over the next line, which is, you're gonna
let me tell you something. We don't talk over that thing. They scream it, and that's why our kids are going to eat your kids alive.
You know what's going to happen to your kids?
They're going to die!
No, I let them hear it. They know that's the word. But it is crazy that my 4-year-old loves it. Mm. My 9-year-old loves it. And then I'm like, all right, well, if you love that, let me play you Paradise City. Let me play you some of the songs.
I played them for my kids. I remember, so for us,
Appetite for Destruction came out when we were freshmen.
Freshman high school. And
so you were like doing heroin and hanging out with
no,
kids.
No, but we were in that. So like we would get into our neighbors. We had a carpool. We drove with our neighbor.
Buddy drove us to high school instead of taking the bus.
And like that, I mean, he took us
in his red Celica, Toyota Celica.
Oh, that's a sexy car.
And he took us, and I remember he had the tape, and he would play the tape on the way to school. And we're like, who is this?
Is this dangerous in a tape?
Yeah.
It was dangerous in a tape. It was so good.
And then 2 years later, NWA came out. Eazy-E and NWA came out.
They kind of blew that out of the water.
And we were listening to that like on the way to school.
Loving that. Loving like Eazy-E and like all that stuff was
just
like
loving just, it.
Did you ever get into that like hardcore rap when you were a kid?
Gangster rap is what it was called.
Yeah,
I listened to a lot of like Houston rap.
Oh,
whatever.
Okay.
H-Town.
Yeah, H-Town.
H-Town in the house.
Yeah, it's Houston rap is like hard.
Mm.
Yeah.
you've played a little bit of it for
you're
me.
You're not
and
a
it's,
fan.
I wouldn't say that.
But yeah, that was the only rap I really listened to that I like really loved.
I just remember that. And when we, and then in college, it was like Snoop's album came out when we were in college. Doggy Style. And I just, and we met him. We had a chance to meet him. We were doing Jim Rome's TV show and Snoop was there.
Uh-huh.
And we were all guests on the show. And outside of where the studio was, we saw him and we're like, can we please get a picture with you, Mr. Dog?
Mr. Dog.
And he calls over one of his two white assistants to come and take the picture for us. And we were like,
thank you
so much. And we go to walk away. We didn't want to take up too much time. He's like, hold up, my brothers. And he had his assistant grab his thing and he took a picture of us with him. And he's like, I used to watch Cheap Seats all the time.
Oh, really?
And he starts talking about
roller derby,
how he would watch it in Long Beach with his grandma. And they would watch roller derby together, Skinny Minnie Miller and this and that. And he's because we did some roller derby episodes on Cheap Seats and how much he loved it.
The leg whip.
He starts like physically doing like the leg whip type of thing in roller derby. And we were enrapt and laughing. And we were like, I completely understand why you are the star that you are.
Right.
Because you just have it.
Yeah.
He just has it. No, is he crooning like Dean Martin
Nate,
or
Nate
whoever?
Dog.
No. Nate Dogg.
I said Nate Dogg. Nate Dogg was
the
Michael McDonald of his time.
He was.
Like, on everybody's track.
Because Michael McDonald back in the early 80s would just pop on and do like two lines on a song.
Right.
Ride Like the Wind.
Also, Michael McDonald had a lot more than two lines on Regulate. Let's say that right now.
I know. So, I mean, Nate Dogg had many lines on that. But I'm saying that. So, Snoop, there was a moment where I was like, it's crazy to me that as Jewish kids in suburban St. Creve-Coeur, St. Louis,
we're walking around saying 16 in the clip and one in the hole. Nate Dogg is about to make some bodies turn cold.
That was later. But I mean, like, we connected with his music.
Yeah, that's nuts.
To me, was with like no gangsta, you know,
feelings.
Tendencies or feelings or any of that. We just
thought
it was
probably
amazing.
The first day he ever realized that white people liked his music too.
When we told him,
I'm like, I don't get it, man. I don't get it.
Well, is that that's it, right? You guys both
that's
went.
It.
Okay,
that's it. We both went singularly, and then both.
Do you have any closing ideas about? I love like the kid thing drives me nuts, though.
The
you guys brought up a big issue
nuts.
With that.
I know.
You know, everything's catered to kids now, and it's like
so. It's your opportunity at times to show them some things.
Yeah, you got
to
show
them.
Well,
she's much better at it than I am. She's like she plays like current indie shit for our kids.
So
you know?
So do we. I choose the records we listen to in the morning, so that my kids now know songs. And I got Jay got a record player.
My cousin was married to Lewis Black, the not the comedian, but the guy who started South by Southwest.
Okay.
And she was just like,
I think his old stereo.
And she was like, I'm done with the record player and the speakers. I said, I'll take it because I knew how special it was. Now we put it in our garage playroom, and now I take my kids out there when we want to hang out, and I let them pick a record. Then I pick a record. I play for my son, Odelay. Odelay, which is something he would never come in contact with.
Right.
There's some weird stuff on there. You got to get through some hard stuff.
Yeah.
It's not all melodic and easy.
Right.
But when you get through it and you get to the other side, and there are these like really beautiful chunky riffs, and like it's Beck. It's Beck in his prime. And
my kids love it, and now they ask for it. Mm-hmm. And so it was just a little exposure. That's it.
Right.
That's all we needed.
So I say to my kids, you need to be up on everything that's popular. I don't care. My youngest one, who knows every like pop song, will like bring stuff to me, like the song Mi Gente, which is like a short time ago, came out and was like this big song. And I'm like, I love this. This is amazing. Yeah. You guys need to know all that stuff. But let me also be the one to introduce you to everything else. So I came home from work one day and the kids were, you know, home doing their homework, and we have on this, my wife designed like a huge long, like 13 foot long record cabinet that have drawers that pull out and you can flip through it like you're at a record store, like all the drawers that pull out. It was most genius thing. The record player is on top of it, and then we have a little like Lucite display thing next to the record player that shows you can put the album cover on so you know what you're playing, just so people can see where you're, like a record store. And I came home one day, and we had put all the records away in the morning, and so clearly there was nothing there. And I came home, and I look in the – walk into the living room where it is, and my daughter had put the Weezer Blue album on to do her homework. Mm-hmm. And I was like, my job as a parent is done.
Well, I would have been like, don't get carried away and follow the rest of that catalog, but that's a very good
You can go two more albums.
Yeah,
two
more. Two more.
You hit Pinkerton, we're good.
Yeah.
Then the Green Album, I'm fine.
You're fine.
Yeah.
Beyond that.
Pick and choose. Pick and choose.
Yeah. Yeah, be smart.
That was awesome.
Thank you.
That was so great.
For having
Thank you for getting vulnerable. I feel like
we live for that.
That was great.
I love that. I mean, the New York thing speaks to me so much because I lived there for 10 years and I love that place. And to me, that will always feel like home. And you are so right about it taking you back, music being able to take you back there.
Check out Luna Penthouse, that album. It might really.
I think we're going to try it. And today's a good day for it because it's raining.
Totally.
That is a
And he can pretend like he's in a music video.
I can. And you can't make fun of me for looking out the window.
You can do his hair.
Guys, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. And he's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Pataki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Oh.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, he's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat.
A bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a rich...
I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat. She's a cat.
My girlfriend's a cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I help people. She's a cat. We fight a penguin.
My